Sharptown High School Broadcasting Program.
This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
I am Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And tonight on Queer Voices, we have something unique coming up in our second hour. A live in-studio performance by a gay recording artist. As a result, our lineup will be a little bit different tonight and kind of flexible. But first, a discussion of the recent HISD passage of a non-discrimination and anti-bullying policy for students and upcoming non-discrimination policies for HISD employees, including teachers. Then, the fate of AIDS medication support in Texas has been decided by the state legislature, and it's not good. The AIDS Drug Assistance Program, also called ADAP, has been, quote, deprioritized by our representatives in Austin. So, what does that mean, and what are the next steps? HIV advocate Randall Ellis will be here to discuss the path forward. Then on News Wrap, a U.S. Justice Department has proactively joined the legal challenge to DOMA, arguing that the so-called Defense of Marriage Act is unconstitutional, and has also announced that it will no longer oppose joint bankruptcy filings by legally united same-gender couples. A three-judge panel of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has lifted its stay of a lower court ruling which declared that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is unconstitutional, and has ordered an end to its enforcement. Of course, House Republicans are trying to block the courts by adding new amendments to the 2012 Defense of Authorization Bill. At 10 o'clock, an interview and special in-studio performance by Ryan States, whose day job is circus musician. And the circus is in town, so we have a unique opportunity to have him live in the studio. Ryan's latest CD is called Strange Town. And that's followed by the feature segment from This Way Out, which tonight looks at what is the essence of the gay male African-American experience in the early 21st century, Jack.
Well, usually right after Pride, we sort of have a little bit tough time filling out our schedule because sort of a lot of the events happen. But actually, we have a pretty full schedule going on through the rest of the month, so we're really happy about that. One of the things that are coming up a little bit later this month is the Q-Fest.
Yes, and that's next week.
Next week. And then also there's a dedication in the Montrose here.
Mm-hmm. It's at the corner of California and Grant, near South Beach, near Baba Yaga.
So that'll be happening.
What's the dedication?
It's the Aaron Shearhorn Foundation.
Oh, yes.
Yes,
that's right.
We had them on our show, and Aaron Shearhorn was murdered near a bar on Pacific Street. And there's a whole organization that's dedicated to his memory, and there's actually a ceremony and a tree that's been planted. And so we're going to have them on next week, too.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Qu'est-ce que c'est le Q-Fest?
That is the queer film festival for the community.
It's the last weekend in July, and there's all kinds of crazy films that we'll be talking about next week. And
very interesting films.
Yes, there's opening and closing nights, and it'll be very good.
Yes. I also want to give a little bit of a shout-out to Tim Brickhover for hosting, again, the quarterly community leadership meeting at the community center, which is in the Dow School up in the old Sixth Ward.
I've never been there before, but it was a very nice meeting and a nice venue for...
It was an intimate setting. There wasn't a lot of us there, but what I really like about that is it's sort of an open forum where we all can talk about what's going on in the community and sort of network a little bit, and it's sort of... interesting thing, and I hope if any of you have a chance to join us the next time, it'll be in 3 months, that you will do that, because you don't have to be a leader. You can just be interested in what's going on in the community. And they do that 4 times a year. It's an open venue on a Saturday afternoon, and you can learn a lot about what's going on in the community. So I really appreciate him putting that together and continuing it, because that actually goes out of the second town hall meeting that was a number of years ago, that just sort of, like, it's not an organization, it's just sort of a way that we can just communicate what's going
on? You know, it gets people that are involved in the community together and kind of collaborate and make sure that, you know, we're not duplicating efforts and, you know, what people are working on and kind of what the initiatives are. So it's very interesting and it's empowering to me, at least.
And Outsmart's new issue is out, and they have pictures from Pride. I think it's probably the first time ever, if I'm not mistaken, to have the pictures in July of the June event.
Good going there.
Yes.
Outsmart's right on top of it this time.
I love it.
Congratulations to Outsmart.
Okay. And one of the stories in Outsmart is talking about the HISD non-discrimination.
Yes, it is.
So Jennifer's sort of going to be on the other side of the microphone tonight.
Yes.
Again. and Anna Eastman is here, who is a relatively new school board member. When were you elected?
I was elected in November of 2009.
Okay. So, let's talk a little bit about that. What is it like? You worked hard for that election to get elected. Mm-hmm. What is it like to be on the board of HISD?
Well, it's an incredibly rigorous and challenging position. It's all volunteer, and I would say I'm fortunate that I can spend about 30 hours a week on it. And that varies everything from meeting with constituents to staying up with what it is that we're going to be voting on every month to issues specific to HISD, and then also just educating myself on current trends in education and what's happening in different communities across the United States.
And you have kids that attend school?
I do.
HISD?
I have three. I have a 14-year-old son who is going to be in the classical piano department at HSPVA next year.
Wow.
Incredibly proud
That's
of that.
Great.
And I have an 11-year-old daughter who's going to be starting sixth grade at our new all-girls school that's opening next year. And then I have a 9-year-old son who is going to be in fourth grade at Travis Elementary.
So what was your interest in getting on the board besides having kids?
Right. Well, I think that was it. I worked briefly as a social worker in schools in the early 90s and then started my family and was lucky enough not to have to work by choice. My husband and I always had an agreement that if I was bored or felt like I needed to do it, I would. But I felt it was incredibly important to have the voice of a parent and a child on the board. I mean, kids are our stakeholders. Children are the little guy in the school system, and I think it's incredibly easy to forget that, as crazy as it sounds.
Well, we're going through some really difficult times financially. And HISD is one of the largest school mm-hmm. districts in the country, right?
We're seventh largest in the country, largest in the state.
And with these budget cuts that came from the state, how are you surviving that?
You know, we are incredibly fortunate to have a sound financial program. We have general revenue funds. We have reserves. Some of the things that the legislature is using to minimize the budget cuts are they're going to be pushing back payments to districts, so we'll be whole during that time. We have money there to cover the costs, and luckily we're in a better situation than some other districts in the state, but we've had to let go employees. We've had to do a lot of cuts in our central administration. I think next year the cuts are going to be a lot larger, and we'll probably have to go back to central administration, look at programs, whether or not they're effectively meeting the needs of kids, or there's something that we like and they're kind of fluff. So we're going to be moving into next year and starting again our budgeting process really early.
Wow. And I was at that meeting where you passed the budget, mm-hmm. and you seem to have a consensus on the board.
We do. We've spent the last year going over and having presentations by our CFO, Melinda Garrett, consistent, giving us information over and over again. We have a $1.7 billion budget in HISD, and that will be reduced next year by just under $100 million, including the budget cuts from the state, from the federal government, and then other cost increases. And so we trust that administration has looked at things how they have. We were also very relieved to have overcut. We were planning on a much larger cut. And so when Susan Combs came out with the really devastating numbers at the beginning of the year, we started on a middle ground path. And I was really happy that we adjusted before that vote so the public could see how much of it. It's hard to call it a surplus because we're going to have to go and cut more next year, but to really see what dollars are going to be there for next year.
Now, one of the commitments you made when you were running is to work on a non-discrimination policy at HISD. And I guess once you got on elected, there was probably a call from Jennifer, if not before. And you, I know you helped work behind the scenes very hard. Jennifer Renee Poole has been working on this for 3 years. And
in my last year as president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, in our discussions with, at that time, Superintendent Saavedra, he said that he would, he pledged to work toward that. And so I began working with the administration at that time. And then when I stepped down as president, I was doing that even more. And that was January of 2009. And so I could spend more time. I wasn't distracted by other responsibilities for the community, and I could focus in on that. And so I met on a regular basis with representatives of the administration working on language and bringing information to especially the legal portion of it, the legal chief counsel, so that they could see how it would benefit HISD to have a comprehensive policy that was all-inclusive.
And what was your resistance from the, because it's the board that makes the decision. Did you have resistance from the board?
Well, we did. There are several members on the board, and Anna can speak to that, but which I might not ask her, as you may not want to say. But there were, which I can't, there were a number of individuals that absolutely said they would not speak to it. Many of them wouldn't even take my phone call, or when I met them at the meet and greets, would not, they'd say hello, but that was about it. They would not discuss anything. They'd just walk off, which was a bit frustrating, but I figured I was going to be around longer than they were. And as it turned out, some people were replaced in the election, and we got some good, solid people. Main thing was that it was a change in attitude of how important it was to have a clear, this is having to do with bullying, a clear definition of what, where bullying is and where it was effective. And the different children who attempted suicide or committed suicide brought that home. And that's been in the last 12 months.
Well, in the legislature picking up the anti-bullying, although the actual law that was passed does not mention GLBT people. Now,
Garnett Coleman was the lead person on that, and he has put one before the legislature every time because he understood the importance. And we spoke many times about this. The main thing, though, the heart of the issue came from not only the change in attitude of the board, but the administration willing to work at language and being comfortable with it within policy and of the administration itself. That was the most important change.
The change of the head of HISD.
Well, the change in superintendent made a big difference. We had a superintendent who came from school districts that already had non-discrimination policies and bullying policies that included sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression. So this was something that he didn't understand why we didn't already have it. And by the time he came on, the general counsel and the administrative support service were on board with the change in the language. And they were able to put something in there. Now, I could not go any further without the cooperation of the teachers union. Gail Fallon and Zeph Capo lended their help, so we had a consolidated effort from a number of different directions, from the board, from the teachers union, and from administration, all on board with the language and seeing that that was important, that this was done.
Now, I think it should be noted that this is the only legislative body in this part of Texas that has passed a non-discrimination ordinance.
Absolutely.
And
so we all, every school district has a freedom from harassment and discrimination policy. And one of the things when I started working with Jennifer, I met her when I was campaigning at one of the meet and greets, and we connected immediately. I actually came to a meeting at the old GLBT caucus offices of, I guess it was the Political Action Committee.
Yes.
And I, that was during my race, and met with people to discuss this policy. I was committed to it from the beginning. It's like Jennifer expressed, our superintendent, a no-brainer for me. I think especially if we're going to be addressing bullying policies for kids, we have to ensure that adults feel safe in their jobs and their roles and speaking out for kids. And so we started working early on. And at that time, I had asked Jennifer and Chris Busby to get me, this was after I got elected. We continued meeting on a really regular basis. And at the time, the board just wasn't ready to do it. We had support from different people. Different people politically didn't feel safe bringing it forward. And so, I'm not going to go into details about the who's and what's, but we just didn't have consensus on the board at that time. And one of the things about me is that I love to talk about things that make people uncomfortable out loud. Something that I've worked heavily on before I was on the board and unfortunately haven't been able to commit a lot of time to is working with the UT Prevention and Research Center on adolescent sexual health issues. And I just think the more we as adults in leadership positions can talk about this in a frank and honest manner, the better handle that we'll get on the problems that come up around kids coming of age and grappling with things that we all grappled with ourselves. And so I really started talking about this non-discrimination policy with my colleagues and with the administration, and I had asked Jennifer and Chris to get me a list of other school districts who had passed these policies. And at the time, I don't think anyone in Texas had expanded their language.
No.
They had not. And so, interestingly, our superintendent, Terry Greer, had put this policy in place in North Carolina or South Carolina and in California. California seems like a no-brainer, but South Carolina,
yes,
not so much. You wouldn't think that that would be a really friendly environment. And his position was, these are our employees. Lots of employees fall in this category. You know, that's the last thing that they should be worried about in their jobs. And so, and I guess it was in November when Joel Burns, the Fort Worth councilman,
that's right, yes,
made his speech to city council after Asher Brown. There was that rash of suicides, including Asher Brown. I think he was from Cy Creek. And at that time, it started this conversation around the state, I think, as Jennifer pointed out. And so Fort Worth expanded their language, I believe, in February, and they had sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. And frankly, those were the two, the tail end, were the ones that make everyone uncomfortable.
They sure do.
They bring up all these scenarios that people are worried about that are going to be inappropriate for kids or make other adults uncomfortable. And so behind the scenes, we were able to get the administration to put a really extensive and thorough regulation in place that the board did not have to vote on, that dealt with people and employees going through a transition. And
for people that don't understand, the transition is when a transgender person goes from their sex or gender identity into their opposite gender identity.
Right. And at that time, they added sexual orientation onto that language. But for me, I was not satisfied with that. I wanted it to be in the policy. And so every couple months I would email the administration if an article came up. And so last month I went again and the board president was receptive and I went and pulled language from Dallas and from Austin, who both have sexual orientation and gender. They don't have gender identity and gender expression. And our administration put forth the complete component of language. It's also in our student code of conduct, which has had sexual orientation for several years, but it didn't have gender identity and gender expression. And so at that time, in June, we passed the code of conduct, which only takes one vote, and then we did the first reading for the freedom of from harassment and discrimination. And because I'm so connected to different people in the community, I was forwarded a message about this whole other complement of policies that we have to update with the language to ensure the code of conduct can be enforced legally. And then there's a handful of other ones that have the list of attributes, and our administration is on that, and all of those will be updated.
Yeah. So what was passed was non-discrimination, anti-bullying for the students, correct?
In the code of conduct.
Okay.
And then the policy was passed, 7-0 vote. Two board members were not present. One was in the hospital because he had an infection. The other one was traveling at the time. But that was the first reading. Whenever we pass board policy, we have to vote on it twice.
Okay.
And so in August, we will vote on the second reading.
What's that date in August? Do you know?
I think...
Because, I would say that, you know, it's vitally important that the community come out
and
fill the auditorium in support, just to show that we're support. I have asked to speak at that session of the board.
Can I say one thing real quick about that meeting? And I really, because we have two votes, I didn't discourage people from coming to talk, but didn't do the work to let people know because I knew in August it would be so important to have people there. And it's actually on August 11th. Our board meeting starts at 5 p.m. And it was incredibly moving. We had a teacher get up and share his personal story and a very frank and incredibly difficult story to hear. And at that moment, when I walked in that night, I really thought that there was across-the-board support from my colleagues. But at that moment, for that story to be told, I knew that there was not a person at that table that could conscientiously vote against the story of a kindergarten teacher who had been actively harassed by colleagues and other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was absolutely incredible. I mean, the entire audience there was supportive of it.
Mm-hmm.
The board members that spoke up for this policy was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Gene Locke was out there in the audience clapping for this moving forward. And I got to tell you, it just was so moving. And I got to thank you for all the work that has been done. Jennifer, I know you've been working on this for a long time. But to have a 7-0 vote.
Absolutely.
And the interesting thing was, it didn't make the media because the budget was the big issue.
Absolutely.
And it was just like, this is just what we do, you know?
And that's what was so beautiful about it, because it really did feel like, well, this is a no-brainer. We're going to vote on this and move on. It didn't require a debate or have anyone question it. No one showed up to speak against it.
Exactly.
And to me, that was the most reassuring piece. And that's, I think, where we all want to be, is that...
Yes.
It should be a no-brainer.
Right.
It is just the way it should be. What I wanted to say, and it's inclusive language that says sexual orientation, gender identity, and or expression. Many places they don't add the gender expression or expression. And that's vitally important, and we can discuss the reason for that at a later time, but it's important to note that all of that language is totally inclusive. That's what's important.
Well, thank you, Anna Eastman.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, absolutely. Who is a board member of the Houston Independent School District. She represents Montrose. The districts are really funky the way they're set up.
I actually don't represent Montrose.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Yes. The I-10 and am up in the Heights area, the north side in Garden Oaks. So
And Jennifer Renee Poole, former president of the Houston GLBT Caucus, who has worked on this for a long time. Thank you. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Stories by ghost writers, but more like screaming, like my eyes in bandages all around me. Your flowers, oh, St. Lucie. I can't find the place where I need to be. Oh, St. Lucie, lend your eyes to me. Back by the door, and the next thing I know, I am right there in the front row, trying to crawl inside her smoking mirrors.
This is J.D. Doyle, and that was Katie Curtis from her 2009 CD, Hello Stranger, with the song St. Lucie.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, we went into Pride with a couple of celebrations. One was the fact that Covenant House has changed its policy to be more inclusive to the community. In the past interview, we talked about HISD adding non-discrimination and anti-bullying to their policy. But unfortunately, we've also had some bad news. And Randall Ellis is with us from Legacy Community Health Services, who works on governmental issues. And I know we've been talking about this since the session started, and we knew it was going to be a tough session. But HIV funding for those people who cannot afford it, do not have it through their insurance policies, has pretty much been cut.
Exactly. We've seen a cut, and the way it was done is kind of a tricky way. What they have done to us, basically, the legislature said, you need $20 million. If you want that $20 million, the Department of Health has to ask for that. They can ask for it. So we do have the ability to transfer funds from Medicaid to the HIV medication program. But what we've experienced in the past month is that the health department and HHS, the Texas Health and Human Services Commission, are dragging their feet on it. They don't want to transfer that money because they don't have enough money in Medicaid to start with. But the legislators turn around and say, well, we did what we, you know, you have that method of finance. So we're left continuing to fight and asking and pleading for funds to completely fund the program that provides HIV medications to low-income Texans.
So it's not completely dead. There's something that we can do.
Right, exactly. And that's the upside of it, that we have a method of finance, that there is a way to get money transferred. The issue is not closed. But what it takes is a lot of advocacy and a lot of outcry and demanding of treatment from the community and for people to stay on top of this and not just say the legislature's done. We don't have to participate in Texas advocacy any longer.
So does this mean that people will be taken off that are already on there, or does it mean that newer people who get in the situation will not have access to it?
Good. This is a good question. No one who's currently on the program, as long as they stay in the program, will be removed from the program. Now, if you were to allow your eligibility to lapse for 2 months, and we know that happens, people get going and they forget about things, and you would not be, you potentially could be kept out of the program. The cuts are to, as we've been told from the health department, are for people that will qualify for the program after September 1st. We have a very bare minimum program. And as you may or may not know, across the country, we're doing a lot more testing and trying to find people so that they know their status and then get them into treatment. And if we don't have treatment slots available for the people that we're testing and telling them positive, hitting the epidemic where we need to. We're not treating people, and we're not working on the prevention side the way we need to be doing it.
So this means that what alternatives do people have?
That's a good question, and not every place. I mean, this is across the state of Texas, not just here in Houston. I think we're very lucky to live in Houston, where we have organizations like Legacy that I work for, but other organizations like HACS that help people get medications that may have income above the 200% of the federal poverty level. So first we start tapping into local funds from our local Ryan White Planning Council and our local agencies. Until those are depleted. There's pharmacy assistance programs, but those are only, you know, supposed to last for a few months, you know, when people are changing jobs or, you know, out on down on their luck for some reason. But we will hit a wall when there's not enough funds. You know, we've been hitting that wall every year at Legacy in terms of the money that we have to treat folks. We currently provide about $1 million in uncompensated care out of Legacy alone for people who would otherwise qualify for Ryan White funding.
Well, and let's also, these medications are expensive.
Absolutely. They're
and
very
for
expensive.
Anybody try to fill a gap, any organization, any nonprofit, it's going to be very difficult to do that. On the other hand, people who don't get the medication are going to get sick, end up at public hospital, die.
And die. You hit it right there. And I've done interviews across the state with various news outlets. And they say, what happens if people don't get medications? And I say, people die. And they're like, whoa, walk it back. You know, that's not really going to happen. I'm like, well, yeah, it is. I mean, what we're returning to is a time before protease inhibitors are out. When why get tested if you don't? And I'm not endorsing this. I'm saying that we're not. If we're not providing treatment, we're not provide. And we're telling people they're positive. There's not an incentive to find out your status if you can't get treatment.
So wouldn't this, in the long run, cost more money to have people go untreated and then have to go into the healthcare system and then picked up the slack is picked up there?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at just one episode, someone who is not on medications that should be on medication, and they ended up getting sick, their immune system runs out, gets weak, and they have to go to the hospital. Just that one stay at the hospital, that one admittance into the emergency room, is about $7,000. And these are numbers that we've gotten from our local hospital district here. $7,000. Well, that $7,000 is what it would cost to provide medication through the Texas HIV medication program. They get these medications at a great rate, a lot cheaper than we can if we buy them out of our pocket. So that one hospital stay is the same as it would to provide medications for people all year round.
So a person ends up in the hospital. They sort of get them back, if possible, probably, maybe, possibly. And then they get discharged, and they're basically back in the same cycle again.
Right.
Because they don't have access to medications.
Right. So, I mean, we're going to hit a point in the next year and a half if we don't get the transfer of money where we are basically stabilizing people and then putting them back on the streets. And this flies in the face of everything that science is telling us these days.
That you can't go off the medication.
That you can't go off your medications, that we need to expand our testing programs, and that we need to expand our treatment programs. That the more people that we find living with HIV and are able to get on medication, the more we are able to suppress the community viral load, or the level of virus that is within a community. And if there is less virus out there, there is less transmission of the HIV virus. So,
Randall, ever since I've known you, you've been working on these issues.
Yeah.
This has got to be the toughest time.
It's, you know, I'll tell you, we had a meeting at the Texas Department of State Health Services on January 24th, just before Pride, same day that New York was passing its marriage equality legislation.
You mean June?
June.
January.
Okay.
That's all right.
That's a shout out to my coworker, January Leo. I mean,
oh, yes.
We love January.
This past month, and as you know, I was the only person representing the community at this meeting. I get paid to go up there. I can take, you know, a day trip up there to spend at the health department, and the indifference that health department bureaucracy had towards this issue, and just knowing the pain that this is going to cause people in our community, it was a difficult situation for me, a very emotional feeling in that place where they just don't care about us anymore. They want us to just go away and die. Shut up and die, basically, is sometimes the feeling you get when you're doing this work. But we'll have to push forward. I mean, we can accomplish these things. We have advocates at the legislature who will stand behind us. People who have traditionally been there, our friend Garnett Coleman, Jessica Farrar, who are helping us out and putting pressure on the health department to do what they need to do.
And all the people in your clinic who have been working on this and try to get people in there to get tested, and all of a sudden they got to say, "They're, you know, how do they address this? There may not be hope."
Yeah, it's difficult, and we'll find a way. I don't want to be too much of a downer in terms of handing out death sentences, although I feel like that's what the legislature has done in a certain way. But I think we all have to continue to fight. We have to not let our guard down and not let up until it's over.
Now, I follow January on Facebook, and she's super active, and she's doing things. There's a meeting in Austin at the end of the month, the Medication Program Advisory Committee meeting.
Exactly. So that was the meeting I was at last month in the month of June.
Okay.
They're having another meeting in July 29th. And at that meeting, they are scheduled to bring forth proposals about how they will contain costs within the program, if those are just administrative costs, or if they'll be suggesting pulling back on the program and only letting people with a certain CD4 count into the program, or if they'll be cutting off access to medications that we use to treat symptoms and side effects of the medications. So those are some of the things that they've told us they'll be looking at. And at that meeting, we will continue to pressure them to ask for the $20 million transfer from HHS.
So you need people there.
We need people there. As I said, last month I was the only person there. We really need people from all over the state that are concerned about this issue to show up and to let them know that the eyes of Texas are upon them and that we're watching.
And that they have people out there that they represent that need this and will die. Could die.
I mean, the health department wants to take the path of least resistance. And when I say the health department, I talk about the people that are running the numbers and the budget folks. We have a great group of folks that work within the HIV Bureau. They're advocating for the HIV community, that go to bat for our community all the time within the department. But they can't carry the weight of the community on their shoulders, and we need more advocates out there involved.
We need to clone more Randalls.
Yeah, and January Leos.
And January Leos.
So the legislature themselves. People talk to, I mean, you know, you've talked to a lot of these people.
Right.
Where were they on this? I mean, I know we have strong advocates like Jessica Ferrara and Garnet Coleman and a lot of the Harris County delegation.
Yeah. Our Harris County delegation is great, and they're there with us, and they understand it. And we need to clone them and have more of them up at there and making some of the decisions. But the folks that were in power, that were running the show, created this rider that said Health and Human Services can transfer money from Medicaid over to HIV medication program if asked. And they've kind of said, yeah, we've done what we had to. You know, it's now up to the agencies. They basically punted it because they didn't want to be forced. They were pinned down. Backs against a wall at some point. The press really followed this legislative session. They said, and basically what they've said is, we've done what we had to do.
So if this money is transferred, would that hurt other programs within the state? I mean,
all our programs are hurting within the state.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the two sentence overview is, our Medicaid, program has to come back every session, every time they go back and get an emergency transfer, because they always underfund it. Well, this session, they underfunded it by 6 months. So if you look at 6 months of funding for Medicaid, and they were to just add in another $20 million is what we need for the HIV medication program, it's chump change. It's a rounding error. We would need more money in the Medicaid program, but we know that right now.
But isn't a lot of that matching funds from the federal government?
The Medicaid program, there mostly are matching funds. It's about every $3 the state puts in, the federal government contributes $7 for Medicaid. So, Health and Human Services across the board, whether you're looking at children, pregnant mothers, people living with HIV, kidney disease, everyone got underfunded, and we're all going to hit walls where our programs run out of money, because the legislature did not fix the problem. They did not fix the revenue problem. We don't have enough money.
Okay, so what can we do?
You need to be involved. You need to watch what's going on. Of course, Brian mentioned our Facebook page, Texas HIV Coalition on Facebook. You can also go to Texas HIV, and that's Texas spelled out, HIV.org. Sign up for our alerts. We post news up there, keep things current. We also put out updates about what's going on to stay in the loop. We try to make it as easy for you as possible with the information. Plus, if you go to one of those sites and sign up or follow us on Facebook, you will find out what our latest action alert is. And with those action alerts, I like to say they're click and complain. We make it really easy for you. You put in some information, push click here, and it will send a fax, or we'll pop up a phone number that we ask you to call, and we'll give you a script. We will keep you, and we will walk you through the steps about how you can stay involved and how you can make your voice heard.
It's like HIV advocacy at 101.
Basically, yes, yeah.
Well, Randall, thank you for joining us. Randall Ellis is with the Legacy Health organization here in, actually, it's all over Houston now, right?
We're all over Houston, from Gulfton to the Fifth Ward.
And when is your new building going to be open?
Our new building opens this fall. In September, we'll be opening. I don't have an official date on it, but
it's coming along.
It's coming along. Trust me, we're excited.
Very impressive.
Be able to watch a Pride Parade from there.
Exactly.
Ooh, sell seats.
And I can see the heights from my desk.
Thank you, Randall, for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Robert LeBlanc.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 9th, 2011. The Obama administration advanced the cause of U.S. lesbian and gay equality this week, while Republicans continued to obstruct progress and tilt at wartime windmills. The Department of Justice signaled in February that it would no longer defend court challenges to the constitutionality of DOMA, the so-called Defense of Marriage Act that bans federal recognition of same-gender couples. This week, the agency filed a brief proactively arguing that DOMA does violate the U.S. Constitution. The case involves Karen Galinsky, a lesbian federal court employee denied medical coverage for her wife, whom she married when same-gender couples could briefly do so in California before the November 2008 passage of Proposition 8. This week's Department of Justice brief acknowledges that the federal government has played a significant and regrettable role in the history of discrimination against gay and lesbian individuals. It also offers evidence that passage of DOMA in 1996 was motivated by prejudice against lesbians and gay men. And after a thorough argument that laws that treat lesbian and gay people differently should be subject to heightened scrutiny, the brief concludes that DOMA fails to meet that required legal test and is therefore unconstitutional. Lambda Legal staff attorney Tara Borelli, who's representing Galinsky, called the Justice Department's evolution from defending DOMA to now actively opposing it an historic shift with enormous significance. DOMA continues to be defended in federal court by legal counsel hired by the leadership of the Republican-controlled U.S. House of Representatives.
The U.S. Justice Department also indicated this week that it would no longer fight the filing of bankruptcy petitions by legally united same-gender couples. The specific case involved Jean Ballas and Carlos Morales, who had also married in California in 2008 during the brief time it was legal. But unemployment and medical issues created financial turmoil for the couple. Their joint filing for bankruptcy protection in February was rejected based on DOMA's denial of federal recognition to same-gender couples. In what was called an unusually strong expression of judicial sentiment, 20 of 25 judges in the Los Angeles-based U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Central District of California signed on to the ruling in the couple's favor that declared DOMA to be unconstitutional. A Justice Department official told the D.C.-based LGBT Metro Weekly newspaper that the Department of Justice has informed bankruptcy courts that it will no longer seek dismissal of bankruptcy petitions filed jointly by same-sex debtors who are married under state law.
A three-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled this week that the Pentagon can no longer enforce Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which requires lesbian and gay military personnel to stay closeted. The ruling lifts the appeals court's stay of a federal district court ruling in the case filed by the LGBT advocacy group Log Cabin Republicans that found the policy to be a violation of the U.S. Constitution. The original decision issued by U.S. District Judge Virginia Phillips in October 2010 led to a limbo-like temporary freeze on discharges under the policy until the Ninth Circuit issued a stay of the ruling's implementation. So even though the policy has again been declared invalid, LGBT military advocacy groups are urging currently serving lesbian and gay personnel to not come out just yet. In ordering an end to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the panel of Ninth Circuit judges expressly referenced the Obama administration's position in the Galinsky case. In the context of the Defense of Marriage Act, they wrote, the United States has recently taken the position that classifications based on sexual orientation should be subjected to heightened scrutiny.
A Defense Department spokesperson said that the military will, of course, comply with orders of the court, but noted that implementation of the DADT repeal voted by the Congress and signed into law by the president last December is proceeding smoothly, is well underway, and certification is just weeks away. However, there is a 60-day waiting period after the president, defense secretary, and joint chiefs chair certify that months of training this year have readied the military to accept openly lesbian and gay personnel. Dan Woods, lead attorney in the Log Cabin Republicans case, told The Advocate that we don't have to wait for politicians and bureaucrats to certify whether the military is ready for repeal, because the courts have done it. The Army Times also reported late this week that recruiters have been told that they can now begin accepting applications for military service by qualified, self-identified gays and lesbians. That seems to signal that the Pentagon is not planning to appeal the Ninth Circuit ruling.
But the Republican-led U.S. House of Representatives voted this week to amend the 2012 Defense Authorization Bill to reaffirm that military policy is DOMA inclusive. Pentagon officials have made it clear that they are bound by DOMA, like every other federal agency. But it's not surprising that the amendment was authored by North Carolina's Virginia Fox, who infamously said during House debate on a sexual minority-inclusive hate crimes bill that the gay-bashing murder of Matthew Shepard was a hoax. Another GOP-sponsored amendment would deny federal funding to facilitate civil marriage or civil union ceremonies for same-gender couples. And a third would curiously prevent the military from providing training on Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal to chaplains or to personnel in combat zones. These amendments are not expected to pass in the marginally Democratic Senate. Similar GOP amendments have not survived conference committee reconciliations.
Elsewhere, the Council of Europe has unveiled its first social legal report on anti-LGBT discrimination in the association's 47 member countries. It charts the legal situation in each nation and highlights social attitudes and opinions about LGBT people. It also provides recommendations on how to end discrimination, ensure full equality, and increase awareness and understanding of sexual orientations and gender identities. Martin K.I. Christensen, board co-chair of the European region of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association, best known by its old acronym ILGA, called it a very important document that, along with the Council of Europe's Committee of Ministers' recommendations, adopted in March, and the number of the judgments by the European Court of Human Rights, will provide European countries with a solid roadmap towards full equality and respect of LGBT people's human rights.
Meanwhile, a diverse crowd of more than a million people celebrated Pride in London on July 2nd, with a mix of politicians and political protesters, members of the armed forces and police, and costumed revelers, the latter including Speedo and underwater mask-wearing members of GLUG, the gay-lesbian underwater group. The celebration continued long into the night, with DJs, live music and comedy, and celebrity speakers on the main stage in Trafalgar Square, and street parties and open-air clubbing in the Soho district. As the London Independent newspaper noted, what started in 1972 as a battle for equal rights has been almost overtaken by a celebration of the right to party.
Lima Mayor Susana Villaron led a few hundred people in the 10th annual Pride Parade in the Peruvian capital on the same day. Agence France-Presse reported that men and women dressed in sequined outfits, colorful dresses, and waving rainbow flags danced on floats to the beat of techno music. Others walked along the vehicles handing out condoms to supporters lining the streets. The parade ended at a downtown city plaza with a concert and dance party. In response to criticism of her participation, the left-leaning mayor, Villaron, who in January was sworn in as Lima's first woman mayor, told reporters that everyone has a right to be in Lima and express themselves. Nobody is going to dissuade me from serving the people of Lima.
Groups ranging from Dykes on Bikes to the Alliance for South Asian AIDS Prevention and the Canadian Armed Forces strutted their stuff through downtown Toronto at the city's 31st annual Pride Parade on July 3rd. More than a million rainbow flag-waving celebrants, many keeping each other cool with squirt guns, also applauded several celebrities and politicians, gyrated to music by Lady Gaga and Madonna, and enjoyed several multicolored floats in the lengthy procession. It took more than 4 hours for the last contingent to reach the finish line, making this year's parade the longest ever. Several dance parties continued the celebration. Toronto is scheduled to host the World Pride Parade in 2014.
The Obama administration is strongly defending a first-ever Pride observance at the U.S. Embassy in Islamabad in late June that prompted protest marches by religious conservatives across Pakistan. Leaders of Pakistani LGBT groups joined embassy officials, military representatives, and foreign diplomats at the event hosted by U.S. Deputy Ambassador Richard Hoagland, who reaffirmed America's support for LGBT rights. State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland told reporters that the U.S. government will speak out for what we think is right anywhere in the world, including in Pakistan. Pakistani officials have not lodged a formal complaint about the event that could further strain already strained relations between the two countries.
And finally, supportive 74-year-old Joan Parker, who was attending a Pride event with her husband in Salisbury, North Carolina, has been charged with misdemeanor assault for kissing a protesting Bible-waving preacher. 49-year-old New Light Baptist Church minister James Edward Belcher was among some 200 protesters at the July 2nd event that drew an estimated 2,000 people to Salisbury, which is about 45 miles northeast of Charlotte. He was just screaming at the top of his lungs, "Sodomites and you're going to hell," Parker said in an interview with the Associated Press. "I thought he needed a hug," she said, "so I gave him a hug." She admits that she also gave him a little kiss. Belcher claimed that if he hadn't turned his head, it would have been on the mouth. Parker is due back in court on September 12th. She faces up to 30 days of community service as a first-time offender. Police officials said they were surprised that Belcher pressed charges and that he didn't just turn the other cheek.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 9th, 2011. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Robert LeBlanc.
Hit the brush. Every sound became a hush. Making my way through the eye of a crowd, finding myself lying down, staring up at the sky, breathing in all the light. I saw faces in the glow. Good people I used to know. When you glance at me and I look away, you remind me of a hell I won't pay anymore. So crown me man of the year. Sleeping in hotels, hard with hate. At the palace now I watch as the gate swings open to welcome the man of the air. The guy you'd expect to see, just the guy that I've been dying to be all my life. So thank you, man of the year.
I've never been high. widely seen as the channel of reference for coverage of the Middle East and Global South, Al Jazeera English can now be heard on 90.1 KPFT. Al Jazeera English has become a world leader in the coverage of Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Europe, and the Americas. You can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT FM and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Al Jazeera English has received many awards for its reporting. With a staff of more than 1,000 from 50 different countries, the aim of Al Jazeera English is to provide independent and impartial news for an international audience. Again, you can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Visit kpft.org for a complete program schedule. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Just sing if you're happy. This way.
Well, the circus is in town, and we have something of an experiment here. We're going to do some live music along with interviews, and J.D. Doyle is with us live in the studio, along with Ryan States. And Ryan, I understand J.D. is a circus music performer? I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yeah, we'll get into that after a while.
Okay.
This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices, and as Glenn says, we're doing something a little different. We hope it goes fairly smoothly. One of my artist friends and a guy I'm a fan of is Ryan States. He's in town this week, and I figured, why don't we have him perform live in the studio? Maybe a little bold for us. He brought his keyboard. He brought a friend from the circus, Ian Murphy, to play guitar. And one of the reasons I even thought of Ryan is that his latest CD is called Strange Town. I'm a big fan of that CD. I named it one of the best CDs of 2010 on my Out Radio show. So let's introduce Ryan.
Hey, J.D.
Welcome to Queer Voices.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you letting me bring all this stuff in here.
The studio is filled with stuff. Tell us about the album Strange Town.
Strange Town is the first album ever made on a train, I like to say. I'm a circus musician, and so I have a train room that I live in, and I have a portable studio in there. And I recorded a pop rock CD of Out material that I wrote. And I was really lucky because I was able to use a lot of musician friends of mine, a lot of people, about half the musicians are circus musicians that I've played with and met through the years. And it was also an experiment in remote recording, in doing long-distance recording where I would collaborate back and forth with people I hadn't even met before.
Someone in a different city may be giving you a guitar part.
Oh, absolutely. Guitar, drums, horns. Yeah, I just scoured the internet for different musicians, and it was cool. It's definitely cool. I'm definitely going to do that again. I especially since I continue to live on the train, continue to record half the people in my train room and half the people long distance.
Okay, we're going to get into some music to not make you wait any longer, and I kind of let Ryan pick what songs he wanted to play. So what's this first one?
Immigrant, Fish Out of Water.
1, 2, 3, 4. I was stopped by the Texas State Patrol. Didn't like the sound of my radio. I guess you never heard a heat wave. Do you like my shoes? You want to trade? I was told by a man of the cloth that it's not good to be so soft. He didn't approve of the love I made. Said I was lost and he was saved. At times feel like fish out of water. Sometimes forget I'm not from here. The spirit longs for a much larger world. Been waiting for like 5 years ago. Made a vow with my co-conspirator to emigrate up north together. Said we'd give up all our lust if we let another year get the best of us. Then we'd be where the dreamers go. Losing ourselves in the world capital. Now he say he gonna make it in singer. He got another place with another singer. At times feel like fish out of water. Sometimes forget I'm not from here. The spirit longs for a much larger world. Been waiting for like 5 years ago. Come steal a ride if I need to. There isn't much that I would not do. I may love someone, though it's not fair. But I still don't know if I'll ever get there. Gonna quit my job for my sanity. Wake up tomorrow, I'll be 70. But hey, that's just another year. And by the way things look, I'll still be here. Oh, it can't be so. I belong where I cannot go. Oh, didn't you know? We are all born alone. At times feel like fish out of water. Sometimes forget I'm not from here. The spirit longs for a much larger world. Been waiting for like 5 years ago.
Immigrant song.
Yeah.
That song starts out in Texas. Are you from Texas?
Yeah, I lived in the Dallas area for about 10 years. I was finished high school there. I went to college. I went to University of North Texas, and I lived in Richardson and Louisville. And, yeah. So it's good to be back. It's good. And I got to say, we came back, we were in San Antonio last week, which is a great way to break yourself back into Texas. I love Texas. But it's really good to be back.
I understand. I know you have a story about getting your inspiration to write gay music, and you got that in Texas.
Right. Yeah, I was living in Louisville, and every Sunday night the radio program would come on, and I'd be listening to This Way Out, and it was amazing because I was hearing this out music, and I was hearing these interviews with out artists who weren't compromising, they weren't changing the pronouns, and they're female impersonators, and I was inspired by the radio to do out music, you know, as I told you before, and yeah, it's really good, and I really respect what you do as a producer and the music historian, checking out your queer music heritage, and I've spent hours and hours listening to your programs and discovering out artists and loving it.
Okay, why do you write music?
You know, I was 15 and my piano teacher, she started teaching me chords and said, well, you just mess around with that. So my piano teacher, Jane Roberts, sort of planted the seed, and I started just improvising I come from a really musical family. My brothers were DJs in Chicago, and everybody pretty much played an instrument. My dad was a trombone player in the Army band, and he would also play in swing bands and tour in, when he was younger. And so it was just a real good musical experience coming from a family like that. So it was fun in high school. You know, we'd play in garage bands.
You kind of grew up with it.
Yeah, just totally grew up with it.
But you must have that spark that drives you to write it.
Well, you know, I do want to tell stories that I haven't heard in the media myself. I want to talk about, you know, we have music in our, we have stories in our community that I'm just not seeing in pop culture more now, thanks to programs like yours. And so I want to be part of that. You know, I'm doing it because it's about the message, and also because I just love doing it. And I really enjoy working with musicians. And
what comes first, music or words?
I think lately I've been writing the words first and then putting them to music. When I was younger, though, I would just create jams and just, you know, take the sequencer and start adding parts, and then I'd start improvising vocally over that. I think as I write, I'm sort of putting both together, sort of want to combine both of those ends of the spectrum.
How much is art and how much is craft?
art, I don't know if I can call it art. I do. I mean, I
that wasn't on my list of things to ask. I'm sorry.
Arts and crafts. I feel like we're at Michael's. I just love to dig into the software, the music software, and come up with the new sounds and put loops together. And of course, I don't always have to do that because we have musicians, and there's so many musicians offering their services online that songwriters can use and producers can use to just find musicians. And
you've worked with one of our local artists though too,
Mike Ader.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've played him frequently, and he did a remix for you.
Yeah, yeah. I heard him do Stay. I heard
on my show,
on your show, and loved the song. And you know, I started following him on Facebook and asked him to remix one of the songs from my record, How Do You Know Your Love? And he was great to work with. He was awesome, and I loved the track. It was like this 80s house music kind of thing that I was going for. And so that remix is now out. Yeah.
Available online.
Available online.
What are you going to play for us next?
A song called Too Young. I was thinking,
this is one not released, right?
This is unreleased. Can I take a second to turn the guitar up? So
yep.
I don't know if you're getting enough guitar. I'm just going to turn it. We'll see how this goes.
Well, actually, I just biked the guitar directly.
Oh, okay.
So we should be getting it clearer than last time this time.
So, okay, great. Thank you.
This is Young Love?
This is called Too Young.
Too Young.
What if I fell in love with the wrong kind? What if I met someone that really captured my mind? I don't know where he went or who he's with. He could be married with children, working on his fifth. Please tell him that he's much too young. Give up hope, his life has just begun. Please tell me he doesn't swallow all the mythology he used to follow. What if I met him now with his blushing bride? What if I nodded and smiled but just pass him by? Should I have rescued her? Rescued him, or let them both embrace heterosexism. He loved to touch me, but does he remember as he slides the ring upon her finger? She deserves to be wanted in ways he never will, so he keeps on taking the doctor's pill. Tell him
that he's much too young to give up hope. His life has just begun. Please tell me he doesn't swallow all the mythology he used to follow. Much too young to give up hope. His life has just begun. Please tell me he doesn't swallow all the mythology he used to follow.
Let that be a lesson to you, young straight guys who may not be straight.
Yeah, I didn't warn you about it. I didn't tell you about that song.
This was the radio premiere. I'm too young, right?
True, very true, yeah.
Let's talk more about the circus. This is an angle that people are always interested in.
Okay, yeah, I've been...
What's it like performing for a circus?
It's exciting. Everyone who's there wants to be there. It's so great working in entertainment where people are coming, they're happy you're there, and it's a good day. It's a day to be with their family. It's a good date night, really.
Now you're in the orchestra?
Right, yeah.
The circus orchestra. You're not riding the elephant or...
No, but I saw my friend Shondor riding the elephant this week. I think that was kind of cool. I am a circus musician. There's a 9-piece circus band, and we make a lot of noise. We have 4 horn players, we have a rhythm section, 2 keyboards, and we're on stage from the beginning to the end. So it's exciting. There's a lot of energy. And it's cool. I mean, it's a really good production. It's great costumes, great lighting and everything.
How many employees are with the company?
I don't know. What do we have? It's like 350 people touring, I think.
And y'all ride by train.
We ride by train, yeah. Live on an old-fashioned circus train, yeah.
And there are actually 2 circuses traveling the country.
Right. There are 2 units, the red and the blue. And the blue is
and
in
you'd
Houston.
You'd rather be blue.
I'd rather be... Wow, that's actually... Is it because I'm wearing all black and it was sunny? I was hoping for rain. But, it's pretty incredible. There's so many talented performers brought from all over the world that are brought to the circus, and we create a production. And it's like about... It's over 2 hours show. It's great for kids. It's great for adults.
Among the employees, is there sort of a gay community?
Well, we know who each other are, I think, for the most part. I don't know if we have, our own gayborhood or anything. You know what? That might be kind of scary if we had our own train car.
Train 7. Look out.
Yeah, just... I'll pitch the idea. We'll see how it flies. Okay. But, it's cool. It's good working somewhere, where I'm out, and I don't have to worry about that. You know, I've worked in places where I wasn't. And it's great to be around creative, collaborative artists,
You've been doing this for 7 years?
7 years on the road, yeah, on the train. And, we're here in Houston at Reliant Stadium. We're here, I think, through the 24th. And we're playing. It's huge. It's like, it's the venue. It's insane. I mean, we have the animal open house there. The animals are indoor, and people come to the animal open house, get to see them, and then come to the show. And it's pretty cool.
Let's hear another song.
What you got?
Tell us about the song before you play it this time.
This one you know. I'll give you what you want. This is from my album Strange Town. Do you want me to hit it?
Sure.
Okay.
You called with an invitation to watch movies on your couch. Did you forget to mention your wife had left the house? Says she would be working late, then we would be alone. I couldn't believe my ears. I could never break up a happy home. But if you're not happy, you should be happy. Just listen to the voice in your heart, and it
hand. There's no need to worry, baby, don't worry. Even if it's the first time anyone has said, I'll give you what you want, the love you never got. I'll give you what you want, you never have to stop. I'll give you what you want, the love you never knew. I'll give you what you want, all I have inside for you. Was marriage your only option? Were you trapped outside yourself? Were you born into a prison to live with someone else? That's how it was for all of us, except a lucky few. Have you been waiting long? And is there anything I can do? 'Cause if you're not happy, you should be happy. I'll show you the things that you have never seen. There's no need to worry, baby, don't worry. 'Cause tonight you can ask me to do anything. I'll give you what you want, the love you never got. I'll give you what you want, you'll never have to stop. I'll give you what you want, love you never knew. I'll give you what you want, all I have inside for you. For you.
I'll give you what you want from the CD Strange Town. And this is your first CD, right?
Right, yeah, my debut record.
How has the experience of putting out a CD, how did it go for you? What surprised you about the process?
Well, what surprised me is just how everything changed. I mean, it wasn't that many years ago that you really couldn't easily put out and distribute a record as an independent. And it was, in the past, you know, I'd always recorded with tape, and then I used a digital 8-track. Just the whole medium changed. This was done in the box. This was done in the computer with Logic. And so just what you're looking at, what you're touching, is a completely different experience as you're recording and mixing from anything I'd done in the past.
How do you think it was received, or is that hard to measure?
Hard to measure. You know, I think before I put too much of an investment in promoting stuff and doing videos, I want to have more product out there, I guess. You know, I want to have more things that have been released, and then I'm going to really try and make a concerted effort to present that to the world, I guess.
What's ahead for you musically?
Well, what's really exciting for me right now is I'm going to start performing live.
Did I plant that seed?
You had a big part of it. It was you. It was definitely you, JD. And I'd gone to a friend's wedding in Nashville recently, I was playing on stage with the old group of musicians I played with in college, and just the experience of playing rock music with amps all around you, it sort of reminded me of kind of, you know, why I got interested in rock. And then as I was preparing for today's interview and I was putting these charts together, I thought, well, I can use these charts for all the musicians. So I'm doing the work. I may as well bring in more musicians and start doing gigs. And so I think I'm going to, you know, take a look at that club scene, see if I can hit some cities along the circus tour as we go.
That must be a challenge because you're moving around all the time. It's hard to network with these cities. You've only got a couple days between, you know.
Right. My days off are the travel days. And so, you know, in the past, I didn't even think that performing live was even doable. I thought it was impossible. You know, it just seemed like, when are you going to rehearse with these guys that are already doing a rehearsal in 9 shows a week?
Yeah. And also, your days off are like a Monday and Tuesday.
Right.
Not your best gig night of the week.
Right, right. And so if we try to do a gig on a Friday or Saturday night, we will have already done 2 or 3 shows that day and shows the next morning. So I'm really pleased at the generosity of the musicians that I've talked to that have agreed to help me with this, because they're totally gung-ho. I mean, they're like, let's do it. Let's do it. It's like they're trying to motivate me. So,
how many songs do you have ready for the next CD?
Well, I have the first thing I want to do is put out some of these tunes, a couple of these tunes I'm doing today, which are things I'd done in the past but have never been released. So I just need to get those mixed and put those out. But I'm also still writing new stuff. I have a new song called Because I Can. That'll be in the set that when we start performing live. And so it's a lot of, you know, I'm going to put out the older material, but I'm also working on new stuff.
You want to do a Christmas project?
I want to do a Christmas. More props to JD. I let's see, we were in D.C. We did Fairfax, D.C., and the circus was in Baltimore. And for weeks and weeks, I was on these long commutes listening to your show on my iPhone. Not your show, many shows, all the parts 1 through 4 of all your Christmas
shows. All my
shows
are archived on my website.
Right, your Christmas shows. I went and listened to Queer Music Heritage, the December shows, just all the way back. And you got over a decade there, I think.
Yes.
And a lot of work that I didn't have to do. I just went and listened to you. You've already, you know, scouted out all the talent, the great holiday songs no one's heard yet. So, yeah, I actually have selected about two albums worth of holiday material I would love to record and put out. I don't think it's going to happen in a year or two. I might do maybe an EP every other year, but I'm set for life. I have enough material, thanks to you.
I think we have time for one more song, and let's do that, and then we'll do our exit extra. What's this song coming up?
The song is called Room for Love, and it's something that I wrote when I came out when I was living in Texas.
Another unreleased song.
Another unreleased song.
Hey, listeners.
You hear me and think, who is this man? Doesn't sound much like the brother I had. Me, someday you'll understand. Try not to lose any sleep if you can. So if you choose to cut all ties, 'cause I've chosen to stop the lies, be my guest, join the rest. There's only too much and know too much about me. Forgive me for distancing, censoring my life. It's me, someday you'll understand. Try not to lose any sleep if you can. Just lie down and shut your eyes. Live your days like you live your nights. When you arise, you'll open them and realize you've been no friend. So if you choose to cut all ties, 'cause I've chosen to stop the lies, my guest, join the rest. There's only room for love in my life.
near me and think, who is this man? It doesn't sound much like the song that I had. It's me. Someday you'll understand. Try not to lose any sleep if you can. Try not to lose any sleep if you can.
Is that was the name? What was the name out again?
Room for Love.
I want to thank Glenn for all the extra engineering that went into this this segment.
Yes.
I want to thank Brian and Jack for the scheduling finagling that they had to do to fit us in and to give me a double segment to do this.
You have about 8 more minutes here.
Really?
Yeah, you can do another song if you want.
Okay. I didn't want to forget to thank you guys.
Thank you.
We got to slip in another song?
Yeah, I could do more.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely. You know this tune. This is the one that Mike Gator remixed for me, but we're doing the album version.
Okay.
Yeah.
Better when you're older?
This one is How Do You Know You're in Love?
Okay.
When you think about him all day at work, customers are friendly, but you don't flirt. When you don't go to sleep, you don't care. If you never catch a wink, no, you just lay there. And you feel that it's like taking your first breath of life. How do you know you're in love? How does it feel when you're in love? Don't be afraid falling in love. How do you know when you're in love? When you talk about this bliss you have found, tell it to a stranger on a train he's bound. When you think of silly things that could take him away and worry too much about it anyway. And you feel that it's like taking your first breath of life. How do you know you're in love? How does it feel when you're in love? Don't be afraid falling in love. How do you know when you're in love? Don't try to think it through. Just let your instinct guide you.
How are we doing on time now?
You're good. You've got about 4 minutes.
Okay. We want to thank Ian Murphy for bringing his guitar expertise to our studio, helping Ryan. And the name of the CD is Strange Town. The artist is Ryan States, like the United States. His website, you're going to pay attention, it's ryan-states.com. He's got he stuck a hyphen in there, which annoys me. But
I love how you pay attention to detail. You don't have to do that. I never told you, but you can do it without the hyphen. Just ryanstates.com. I just put it there so visually people could see, you know, the two words.
So you got both?
Yeah, I got both. Yeah.
Okay.
We're good.
So I just wasted that minute.
Well, we have 3 minutes, I think, to waste.
So it's ryanstates.
Yeah. .com.
No hyphen.
Right, ryanstates.com.
Or if you want a hyphen, fine.
Yeah, I'm also at Pandora. You can check it out there. And
you have a sound, what, A Reverb Nation page, right?
Yeah, I got a Reverb Nation page. The music is up at Live FM, at, or Last FM. It's also at iTunes, Rhapsody.
Oh, yeah, iTunes.
CD Baby. Everybody loves CD Baby.
And Amazon.
Yeah. Can I do a shout-out?
Yeah.
Shout-out to Leslie and Adam Hitt, my friends from Dallas who live here now.
Are they listening?
I hope so. It was funny because I was at her dorm back in when I had a recording broadcast when we were in Dallas, so this would be kind of funny because then she'd actually have heard me on the radio in two different cities in Texas. That'd be kind of cool.
Well, she can go to another part of the country and hear the interview I did last year with you and hear it somewhere else. But it wouldn't be live.
Right. It wouldn't be live. Yeah, it's not this. Yeah. Also, you mentioned Mike Gator and also Timothy Bump, if you're listening. What's up, Timothy? And of course, the circus barbecue in the train yard right now. Did Ian you tell me that? Yeah, he told him. So hey to the circus barbecue.
the train is in an undisclosed location in part of Houston.
Right.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, Noah in the Noah's Ark movie and TV series, and you've discovered This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
Follow your favorite international LGBT radio show on Twitter at TWO Radio, read our blog at twopodcast.blogspot.com, and check out our fan page at facebook.com/thiswayoutradio. There are also links to all three at thiswayout.org.
What's the essence of the gay male African-American experience in the 21st century? This Way Out's Ben Karen went to one group that was born in the 20th and has always had a unique answer to that question.
We are oceans of darkness, glimmers of light.
We are numerous and varied, flamboyant and dull, pious, perverse.
We are the who's who and the who's not.
We are oceans of silence, milliseconds of sound.
My name is Tandiwe Thomas DeShazer. I am an actor in the Pomo Afro Homos.
Rashad Pridgen, Pomo Afro Homos, dance artist and actor.
Brian Freeman, writer, director, perform a little bit in the show, and one of the co-founders of the Pomo Afro Homos back in the day, in the original day, 20 years ago.
Jazzy Grego, performance artist and poet, and actor in Pomo Afro Homos.
I asked them, what are Pomo Afro Homos?
Pomo Afro Homos is short for postmodern African-American homosexuals. The name kind of came about back in 1990-91. The name was sort of meant as like a parody of rap groups at the time, like NWA, you know, which stood for the N-word with attitude and things like that. It's just a way of being kind of flip and hip and black and queer and beyond that at the same time.
And how did the Pomos come to exist?
The Pomos, as people, because even all those syllables got to be a little too much for people, started at a small cabaret in San Francisco in 1990, Josie's Cabaret and Juice Joint. And it was originally myself and dancer-singer Eric Gupton and dancer-poet Jola Branner, three black gay men. And we'd all been doing various kinds of theater, dance, performance, not together, but around the Bay Area at different times, some queer, some not. And there was this cabaret space opened and invited us to do a show. I just was talking with them one day and said, hey, you know, it'd be fun to do a black gay show. And they opened up the calendar and said, okay, here's your date. You know, it's like January 10th, 1991. Then I called up the guys and said, well, we have this opportunity. They said, sure. So we just met up and sketched it out. And thus, Pomo Afro Homos was born.
Currently, Pomo Afro Homos as a company is on hiatus. The original members disbanded in the 90s, and it was only recently that Brian Freeman was asked to recreate their original piece, Fierce Love, for a new modern audience. Brian cast three young upstarts in the queer theater community, and they just finished a run of Fierce Love at the Los Angeles Theater Center. I asked the group to discuss their current incarnation of the Pomo's first work.
Well, Fierce Love, Stories of Black Gay Life. It's 12 vignettes, different little skits. It's a cabaret show where we all play different characters that basically encapsulate a time of black queer life, our different experiences, and it's a really great project.
Some of the stories are autobiographical to the original members. Some are fictional. One is adapted from a James Baldwin novel. It sort of tells the story of a range of, from a black gay male perspective of black queer life. When it was done originally, it was really stepping into pretty much a void of, there was gay theater, there was just a poetry performance with black queer subject matter in one city, just hardly anything. So, and you know, it's 20 years later, there's definitely more, not that much more, unfortunately, but there's definitely more. But the stories, they resonate a little differently now, and there's still, you know, people find other things in them.
The following is a monologue from the show delivered by Brian Freeman.
They say, the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice, and I was born in the berry, that's Roxbury, black section of Boston. My dad and Adam Clayton Powell Jr. wannabe, dad had a small business hanging wallpaper in the new suburban homes of the Jewish folks who were moving out of our neighborhood as a whole lot of black folks moved in. Mom, a Diane Carroll wannabe, mom could pass. Passing, that's a black thing, you wouldn't understand. And she worked as a fashion model at Bonwit Teller. We owned our own home, even if it was a slum. We went to an integrated church until we decided we could find better music on Sunday mornings. At age 8, I shook the hand of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on the steps of the Boardman Elementary School in Roxbury. I thought I was shaking hands with Jesus and refused to wash mine for a week, a sin for which my parents nearly slapped the black off of me. We were the very model of a modern Negro family. See? Me, right there. One day, a photographer came through our ghetto with a Polaroid land camera and a pony, and for $1, you could get your picture taken like you were riding my friend Flicker, you know. When Mom came out to pay the photographer, he noticed her runway train stride, and he asked her to pose for a project he was working on model Negro families, that is, pose without the pony. Mom went in the house, put on her Jackie Kennedy outfit. She posed. Dad came home, put on his Sunday suit. He posed. Me, I put on my blue, then green, then blue again, iridescent suit. I posed. He got a set of pictures. We got a set of pictures. Never, ever saw this man again. But 6 months later, my mom, having gone to night school and become a school teacher, was shopping in a school supply store for positive images to pin up in her classroom for Negro History Week. Now, this is before we were black and before we had a month. And in between the cardboard cutouts of red hearts for Valentine's Day and cardboard cutouts of little bunnies with baskets for Easter, she found a set of cardboard cutouts labeled The New Negro Family, featuring herself, my dad, and somebody else's child. For my parents, this was an Ebony magazine dream come true. For me, what a nightmare. It seems some art director in some corporation somewhere had decided I wasn't black enough to be in my own family. Humiliated, I retreated into my books and Johnny Mathis records, vowing that one day, I'd be more than a new Negro. I'd be a new Negro. I'd be different.
And speaking of different, I asked the Pomos how they felt the black queer experience is unique or different from the general queer experience.
The first thing I think that is really unique, specifically in time, like I feel like for a long time, people's stories, who they were and their experience wasn't being expressed. And I think that a lot of people in queer culture have had a sense of invisibility, and sometimes that's been desirable at certain points. But I think that once the gay community became more visible and we came to a space where it almost felt like we had to choose our identity, like there was this question of being gay and being black. And at that time, because there wasn't a lot of conversations happening, individuals were figuring out ways to express that and to experience that on a small community level, but there wasn't a lot of outward expression happening. There wasn't, like, when you talk about gay culture in San Francisco, you're talking about the Castro, but if you go to the Castro, you don't see black culture. And you very much feel like it's for the gay white community, and you're just sort of in it. And you don't feel seen, even as a gay person, by other gay people. And then feeling like the joy of actually finding other black gay men and being able to have community and share experience. Somebody asked me specifically if one of the pieces that I was in, if it was about me. And I stopped, and it was interesting to me because I was like, it is kind of about me. No, it wasn't written for me, and it wasn't written by me. But that's my experience. And to have that out in the world before you get there, for someone to mirror for you what's going on for you, so that you know you're not by yourself in the world, it's a form of relief.
Being in this piece has made me really, really love being a black queer man, like person in general, just because I feel like the way our approach to music is, you can see our contributions to the culture. You can see our contributions to music, to dance, the language that we use, even though it's like it's an inner circle language, like what's the tea girl and things like that. We have, it's a very rich culture, and it's a culture that a lot of the mainstream culture pulls from. Sometimes they don't give us credit. Usually we don't get the credit that we deserve from it, but the fact that we're doing it for ourselves and honoring ourselves is really more powerful than actually getting Billboard awards, Emmys, Grammys, and stuff like that, national recognition. This is about brotherhood.
We are unlike and quite similar to all the age-old myths.
We are young, well, relatively young, gifted, black, and gay, and these are some of our stories, our passions and fears, our victories and tears. Drink them like water, savor them like wine, spread them like fire.
Fierce Love will soon be touring to San Francisco, Boston, and Vermont.
We are an endangered species, but our stories must be told. Our lives, forever real, must be cherished. And our love, forever rising, must be, has got to be, no doubt about it, stronger than our ancestors and twice as fierce.
Thank you again to the Pomo Afro Homos for sharing their stories with us today. For This Way Out, this is Ben Karen.
The Pomos told some of their stories. Now here's London's black Guyana-born lesbian rapper Ms. Fontaine with the untold story from her Spoken Thoughts CD.
So this is dedicated to my LGBT community. LGBT community. LGBT community. We've been fighting this war for quite some time, you know. The war just never told those who really need to be in the know. So this is the untold story. This is the untold story. See, we've lost many soldiers in this war. The war for equality. The war that's bigger than you and me. Bigger than 9/11. And yet the world don't see how many people lose their lives just for the chance to be free. See, freedom comes at a price these days. A price on our heads, you know. That just won't go away because we live a life different in so many ways. Somebody flipped the switch in my head. So the truth I've got to say. Some people live in a closet pretending to be straight. Because society teaches them that this is the only way. So they pretend to be someone they're not. Living alive with 2.5 kids so that they won't be shot. Shut out of this world that exists around them. So they can fit into a community of people who find them normal. So that the lies behind them, don't they know on a tree is the root that feeds the stem. Are being to death every minute of the day, but
still are blinded to the truth day after day, because the government keep it hidden so that the shit don't stray. If the heads aren't behind us, then how can we win? Many of us spend our life fighting, when will that end? We're meant to be a free society, when will that begin? Now when will I be free to say my girl is more than a friend? To my brothers and sisters, let this be a lesson. This war is not over, if most of us are forgotten. Many have suffered, but we must carry on. We've got to be the strength of those still yet to come. To still to join the army for freedom and equality. Still to realize the truth that's embedded in you and me. Now we've suffered, but still we're here today. We're here to prove the point that we're gay and here to stay. To let the world see there's a gay community existing in every country. We shan't be afraid to express our diversity, cause everybody's different, that's the way it's meant to be. Well, I'm proud to be gay and I'm proud to be free. I fight this war with freedom for all eternity, until I take my last breath, until I leave this earth. In a coffin I can then say that this is my rebirth. It's written in the Bible about homosexuality. Well, God made me queer and many will agree. They've wrote it in the scriptures so that everyone can see. They've made it all clear that we're not meant to be. We're here, we're queer, and this is the untold story. Extra, extra, read all about it. This is for my community. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and burgundy. Six color love, rainbow freedom's meant to be.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Robert LeBlanc, and Ben Karen contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride and Daryl Stevens. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation. Thanks also to our generous supporting listeners. Log on to thiswayout.org to join them and to link up with our podcasts, our blog, and our Facebook fan page. This Way Out is also available on iTunes. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening. On KWMD, Anchorage, Alaska, 4NAG, Yeppoon, Queensland, CKLU, Sudbury, Ontario, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned. Da, 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 da.
Bye. was the band Deep Dark Robot. Deep Dark Robot. And from the album released this year, 8 songs about a girl. The name of the track, Won't You Be My Girl. You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning, starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Day at 9, KPFT features programming by you. It's called Open Journal, and it's an experiment in truly community radio. On Open Journal, regular listeners just like you come into KPFT studios to host their own programs. Sometimes it's talk, sometimes it's music, but it's always unique. Open Journal airs weekdays at 9 a.m. right after BBC headlines. The community spotlight at 9:30 is here for you. Open Journal is what community radio is all about. You can even participate and host your own Open Journal. Just drop by KPFT's website at kpft.org to download an Open Journal application. We provide the help, you provide the knowledge. Tune in to Open Journal at 9 a.m. weekdays. This is KPFT Houston.
Listeners love KPFT and its programming, pledge drives not so much. So this summer, KPFT invites you to participate in a bold experiment and join the 10% of KPFT listeners who donate monthly to the station. Visit kpft.org today, click the Every Member a Sustainer button, choose the monthly contribution level you're comfortable with, and do your part to increase that 10% of the listeners sustaining to 100%. With greater sustainer support via kpft.org, KPFT can give you more of the great programming you love. Sustaining members make KPFT's future income predictable, providing the fiscal stability KPFT needs to have fewer pledge drive days. $5, $10, $15, or $20 a month from you makes all the difference. Visit kpft.org, click the Every Member a Sustainer button, and become a sustainer of KPFT quickly and securely online. You'll also be able to make sure your donation goes to the credit of your favorite show, and you can pick out a thank you gift too. This is KPFT Houston.
Many companies will match gifts made to nonprofit organizations. A matching gift from your company will help KPFT preserve independent music, arts, news, and views for generations to enjoy. Participating in your company's matching gift program is as easy as 1, 2, 3. Step 1, make a gift to KPFT. Pledge today at kpft.org. Step 2, contact your human resources office for eligibility requirements and to obtain a matching gift form. Many companies match the gifts of retirees, spouses, and surviving spouses. Step 3, fill out the employee portion of the form completely. Send the form to KPFT, Attention Matching Gifts, 418 Lovett, Houston, Texas 77006. Your gift to KPFT could double if your company has a matching gift program. Help out your community radio station today. This is KPFT Houston.